I don't normally preach from texts, you know, the biblical Romans 2, Christian 6, but I'm going to preach off of the words to a song. Now, as you feel yourself drawn into the darkness and despair of this, I want you to remember that this was written in 1953, and almost everybody in this room is still alive. They're rioting in Africa. They're starving in Spain. There are hurricanes in Florida, and Texas needs rain. The whole world is festering with unhappy souls. The French hate the Germans. The Germans hate the Poles. Italians hate Yugoslavs, and South Africans hate the Dutch, and I don't like anybody very much. But we can be tranquil and thankful and proud, for man's been endowed with a mushroom-shaped cloud, and we know for certain that some lovely day, someone will set the spark off, and we will all be blown away. They're rioting in Africa. There's strife in Iran. What nature doesn't do to us will be done by our fellow man. Well, that's really disheartening, isn't it? Except for the fact that it is a hardy perennial, and we're here. And it's really disheartening, and everybody thinks that Tom Lear wrote that and the Kingston Trio popularized it, but it was actually written, music and lyrics, by the same people that wrote Fiddler on the Roof. This is the kind of spectrum of feelings that we go through. We look at the world today, and I picked Ides of March a long time ago just for the sense of balancing between worlds, but in that time there have been tectonic shifts in our world, and they are very disturbing and disorienting. They are indeed rioting in Africa, a horrible earthquake in China, tectonic plates shifting and thrusting, and human beings suffering and dying. There are hurricanes all over the world, and we know the result of what has happened in Burma, the preferred term for that Burmese use for that wretched dictatorship, where you have a regime that will not allow aid in because they want control, and because they have actually taken aid and sent it off to fulfill rice contracts that the government thieves and kleptocracy wanted for their own coffers. Unthinkable cruelty of human beings, uncaringness by nature. There are bombs going off, obviously, in the Middle East, in Pakistan, in Sri Lanka. There are assassinations and warfare effectively going on, not only in the south part of South America, but in Mexico, where there's a virtual civil war going on between the government and business and narco business, and it is terrible and disheartening chaos. Closer to home, our own barrios and ghettos become graveyards for too many bodies and too many dreams of our own young. And it is hard not to look around the world at nature and at humanity and just go, pooey, and turn off the radio, cancel the subscription, and just stop the world. I want to get off. There are tectonic shifts that are going on all of the time and always have been. There has always been volcanoes, tornadoes, earthquakes, war, famine, pestilence, plague, greed, courage, love, generosity, celebration. All of these are part of the wonder of the human condition. The earth is a beautiful, dangerous place. We are a beautiful and dangerous species. We have very little control over the tectonic plates. We may have a great deal more control, potentially, about climate issues, but that, how that is to be manifest, is still active debate and discussion. What is certain is that change is remarkable, and change is often upsetting. to even the most liberal people and people who believe that change is in general a good thing. Tectonic plates shift, and I don't know, well, given this room, I suspect most of you have been in earthquakes from moderate to strong. And space seems to shift. It is disorienting. I remember the first earthquake that I felt from afar, and it seemed like space was bent by the movement, and I became a little bit dizzy from the shifting of those tectonic plates. Well, the tectonic plates of society and culture are shifting right now. We have, as my friend Al noted, some really different candidates for the presidency of the United States. There is, in all likelihood, going to be a nominee from the Democratic Party who is a black man. This was, I have to tell you, beyond the dreams and aspirations of my youth when I was involved in marching and picketing and registering voters and working for civil rights. We thought someday there might be a black president, but it would probably come through something safe, like a vice presidential nomination. So you kind of sneak it in and hope nobody really notices. That a party would actually say yes is a remarkable change. Whether or not, and this is not a political sermon, believe me, it's not. You know what my views are. I don't need to share them and risk our 501c3. But it's not about for whom or against whom you vote. It is about the issue of change and how much in our world has changed for this to be possible. Whatever you see as Barack Obama's merits or demerits, his blessings or his deficits, this is not a symbolic throwaway vice presidential nomination in a year where the Democratic Party is more rather than less likely to lose. That was a little convoluted. Did you follow that? This is not symbolic and thrown away. This is an actual choice by both works and grace, if indeed it happens, which is more likely than not. Will he succeed? I don't know. Will he be Al Smith, the first Catholic to be nominated by a major party and lose? Or will he be JFK, the first Catholic to be nominated and win? I don't know. But win or lose, it is a huge shift in American consciousness. The same is true in terms of gay marriage. I have been performing ceremonies for same-sex couples since 1969. It will be a thrill to perform my first legal one, because, of course, I am a very equal opportunity person. I think that gay people ought to have to pay clergy, hire halls, buy flowers, and employ caterers just like non-gay people. Why should they get off scot-free? And frankly, for the caterers and florists, it's probably a better clientele for them to deal with. I have done lots of gay services, and it's so interesting to me because I remember the first kind of church service was the mother of one of the guys just going like this because her son, I said, you know, what's bothering you? And she said, he's marrying a Gentile. So I worked that into the ceremony. Because I said, you know, some people just think that people shouldn't get married unless they're exactly the same, and some people think they shouldn't get married if they are the same. There's too little love in the world that I would turn and refuse to consecrate it and bless it to the extent that I can. Will there be a counter-revolution to this tectonic shift? Absolutely. They already claim that there are a million signatures to put a ballot initiative on to change the Constitution of California to to forbid same-sex marriage. Will the counter-revolution win? I don't know. If they get it on the ballot soon, my suspicion is it won't, because November is likely to be a large turnout of young people who live in a different world than I do and my elders have lived in. But change is disorienting. There are people who are made uncomfortable by the idea of same-sex marriage. There are people who are made uncomfortable by somebody with an African name and a dark complexion. Those are realities, and yet the world changes and shifts beyond the dreams of my youth and the nightmares of some people whom I also respect, who can't imagine these changes going on within their lifetime. It is a dizzying world that we live in. Future shock is not for the future. It's right now. And of course there is still homophobia. Of course there's still racism. One of the ongoing discussions that I've been having with one of my colleagues at the Daily News, a black activist and writer, Earl Ofari Hutchinson, is there is a tremendous kind of fear in part of the African-American world about Obama, because they're afraid that he's going to stimulate racism, and the racism that has been buried in society and in some people's hearts might come to the fore. Well, you can count on that. It will happen. But suppression has never been a good therapeutic tool. And dealing with our fears, dealing with our anxieties, dealing with our discomfort is, I believe, the way of embracing change and trying to have some influence on it. When I was reading so many black pundits who were talking about their hesitation about Obama, I couldn't really get a handle on it until I remembered some of the discussion that was going on in the Jewish community when Joe Lieberman was nominated to run as vice president as a Democrat. I remember saying to this congregation when the whole issue came up, I will bet you dinner that he is not the nominee. Well, I paid off with lunch. I should have said that he's not the winning nominee. But there were people within the Jewish community who were made uncomfortable by his nomination because they were afraid that they would be judged by his success or failure. Blamed if the ticket lost, that if Lieberman did something bad, it would reflect on the larger Jewish community. And that if he were lobbying for Israel, it would raise that whole issue up. Well, he's not really an American, he's a Jew. And so there was discomfort. I sense some similar issues through what I'm reading from my black friends and colleagues in terms of their hesitancy, that Obama is not simply a man, he is a symbol and a representative, felt that way by parts of his community. This is a classic Jackie Robinson role. Jackie Robinson, who integrated professional baseball in the modern era, was chosen for his athletic prowess, but just as much for his temperament, because he understood, fair or not fair, he was going to be judged and his people were going to be judged by his performance. He endured, he prevailed, and he changed our view of sports. And it wasn't simply sports. Sports is the sports section of the paper. Something important happened in that. Before Jackie Robinson, arguably even after Jackie Robinson, and it probably started to change with Michael Jordan and with Magic Johnson, white kids started saying, not I'm Mickey Mantle, but I'm Jackie Robinson. Let me be Jackie Robinson. I'm going to do the Magic Johnson move. You had white kids fantasizing as role models, whether they were good role models or not as human beings is a whole different issue with athletes, but as role models of excellence and of virtue in their field, starting to project and make connections that had not been made before. That small act, I argue, changed literally the face of sports, the face and the soul of America. I think these tectonic shifts that we're going through, whether successful in the short term or the medium term, in the long term, we have marked a remarkable rite of passage in this country. Tectonic plates have shifted in this country. There will be people who will vote, could not possibly vote for Obama because of his color or his name. There will be people who will not vote for Hillary because of her gender and not her politics. There will be people who won't vote for McCain because of his geezertude and the inability from mostly younger people to relate to him across age. And racism and sexism and ageism are all unfair, but they are all real and best dealt with sensibly and honestly, as indeed my friend Al offered, that we look at the people and at their policies and at how it fits us, as opposed to the issues of character assassination and guilt by association. I would never want my friend Al tarred by my every sin. Too late, but I mean, it's never anything that I really ever wanted, Al. Change is happening. Something is happening here, and it is exciting, and it is frightening, and there are people who don't have the audacity to hope for what they truly want and are afraid, and they're afraid to hope, and I understand that. That's the reason why in the myth, in Pandora's box, it is hope that is left inside, because in some ways, that's one of the most precious things. And we need to dare to hope, to dream our best dreams, to vote our best ideals and our best values, and not be caught by either conventional wisdom or fear or all of the extrinsic signs and symbols and codes that our society uses to tear down the other, instead of to reflect what it is that we most deeply and passionately care about. We do not need to agree on issues. We do not need to agree on candidates. But we do need to agree to come from our hearts with generosity towards the people who care enough to be involved in the process. Change is inevitable. Some of it we can't control. Some of it we can guide and shape. And we can shape it according to our best selves, our deepest values, and our most sacred dreams.